The Guardian.
Football Weekly, FA Cup weekend, and like a dyslexic with an instant meal, we've got Super Cup action. Boom! Old Trafford, Swans shot Man United with the biggest bony success since Nicole Richie. Forest West Ham, 5-0. Jamie Patterson toast of Nottingham. Big Sam, just toast. As the Little Hammer fans dry their eyes, we round up the weekend's winners and losers, do the transfer thing, speak to the Sid, and marvel at Sunday's Juventus-Roma clash. The old lady on song has the fat lady sung for the Serie A title. All that and more in this Football Weekly. I'm looking forward to a feisty edition of Football Weekly today because its controversy is Jacob Steinberg and he's got a beard.
Yep.
Good one, Jacob.
It's in tribute of you.
Really? Your beard looks better, I think.
We're not fighting anymore.
Rafferty, we're not fighting anymore. We made up over New Year. Rafa?
Hello.
Hi, you're bearded as well. Barry, you going to get a beard? Have you ever grown a beard, Barry?
I've gone about a couple of weeks without shaving, but I don't think I'd grow a particularly good beard because it'd be sort of bald tufts in places. I'm not, I shaved last night, so I'm the only one in here who looks respectable.
Yeah, does your beard come out ginger or what?
I think if I left it long enough, it would come out ginger, yes.
All right, more beard news as we get it.
Maybe I should just
grow a beard.
Grow
Barry.
One and we'll find out.
I think you'll look
put an end to this ongoing debate.
Yeah, absolutely. Settle it once and for all. Boney M, eh? What a band they were.
Yeah.
Everyone's talking about Boney M, of course, and it's all thanks to Wilfred Boney, Swansea's crazy on-fire striker.
He's not really on fire, is he?
He kind of is. Oh, no, he's not literally on fire.
Or crazy.
All right. He may not be on fire, but David Moyes was the one who was put out at the weekend, and that was literally.
Yeah, it was a weird end to the game, actually. I thought it was just going to peter out into a draw, as I think did most of the players. And then Swansea popped up with that very late winner, which seems to have aged David Moyes about 15 years in 2 minutes flat.
Swansea, I mean, fantastic. Another great cup run, and they looked good, didn't they?
They did. For a team that hadn't won in six games, they were very impressive. But I think the fear factor is well and truly gone at Old Trafford. They've lost 4 in 6 there now, which is an astonishing statistic. People aren't intimidated by Manchester United anymore, either at home or away, and Swansea were well worth the win.
Mm. Well, you have to say, I mean, you look at a team sheet and it's just not intimidating. With the best will in the world, you look at those 11 and think, why should we be intimidated? Well, why should we be concerned even?
I mean, no Wazza?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I think it's not really a surprise. We all saw last season how much they relied on Van Persie and Rooney to a lesser extent. It's been exactly the same story. When two of them are playing, one of them is in decent form, then they tend to win games. If they're not playing or if they're not hitting form, then they tend to lose games. And there just isn't enough quality of a similar comparable level to those two in the squad for them to be able to deal with the absence of either of them.
They're still a squad that won the league in April by 11 points. You just feel like they wouldn't, the players as well, although Moyes has to take blame, the players aren't performing to expectations. I can't imagine that they would be pulling this kind of stuff under Ferguson. You imagine that he would be getting maybe 20-30% more out of this squad, which he did for a few years.
Well, the league campaign's already severely compromised. How much damage to Moyes then does this cup exit do?
I'm not sure how much it does. What his contract is, 5 or 6 years, isn't it? So, and he was picked by Ferguson, who's still in the stands watching. It's not historic. Well, maybe. Well, it's been 26 years for the same manager, so it's not been a sacking club. But you would think they would give him time, even if they do finish out the top four.
Right. What happens if they crash out of the League Cup now on Tuesday against high-flying Sunderland, who are fresh from a 2-0 victory against Carlisle? Am I right, Barry?
3-1.
3-1 by two goals anyway. Yeah. Right.
Well, it would probably be better for Sunderland if it was at Old Trafford. Obviously, they'll have one of those. But why not? There's every chance they could turn them over. My only concern is that if United's players got the rocket they deserved after their defeat against Swansea,
did you think
they might bounce back and
put in a
performance?
Is that all that's missing? Are they just a rocket away from a good performance? For example, will Wayne Rooney be returning, or is this groin problem more serious than they're actually saying so far?
What's interesting with Moyes, because Everton, they used to have terrible injury problems, and that was partly the reason that they used to play so badly in the first half of the season, and they would get their players back in the second half. And I don't feel like United have had this many injury problems in the past few years, and suddenly seems to be picking up aches and strains all over the place.
Absolutely.
But Moyes is not one of those sort of unenlightened oaths who's just wandered into...
But he does.
Management
he does seem to have this notion that we train hard at the beginning and we may be a bit leggy in the first half of the season. Certainly Everton bear this out. And then the fitness will have more long-term fitness in the second half.
There were those quotes during pre-season where he said he was, I think he's off the top of my head, where he was overtraining Van Persie.
Right.
And Van Persie had a little niggle at the time.
I think there's two things. I think the first thing you can say is, when you want to point the finger of blame towards Moyes, you have to look at the transfer window. That's where he and Woodward really showed their inexperience.
Right.
And the second point I would make is, you asked before, Jacob, whether it makes a difference or not getting knocked out of the FA Cup. I don't think it makes a big difference to United in terms of finances and what their real aims for the competition for the season are, but it changes the perception, and perception is very important, especially when it comes to getting new players in. Because nobody wants to go to a club where they feel they have to rebuild. It might take 3 or 4 years before we win the Champions League, or before they might even win the Premier League. You want to always go to the club that guarantees you not just money, but trophies. And I think the perception of United being a club that needs a lot of rebuilding and fine-tuning will hurt them more than the actual results.
Brilliant. Right, Josh Willett saying, could you each pick out one realistic signing for United in the January window, and why? That's a tough shout, isn't it? Here's Jan-Ange Fjortoft, who's very convinced that Fabio Coentrão could be on his way to Man United this month. We're going to ask Sid about that later on. Have you heard any Gundogan or Gundoyan?
Problem with Gundogan is that he hasn't kicked a ball since August.
Right.
So I don't think...
He's fresh then. He hasn't overtrained.
Yeah. I don't think he's in a position to move right now. I mean, right. Dortmund would be very, very reluctant to let him go. Unless he would say, look, there's no way I'm signing a new contract beyond 2015, at which point I think they would be happy to do a deal. But I can't see United or any other club signing a player who hasn't played for 6 months, 4 and a half months, with any real confidence before the season starts again for Germany. So I think that's not a possibility. I was on my way in, because I saw that question on Twitter, I was thinking very hard, what player in the right position could help United? Because I think where they probably need most help, it's not a big secret, is in the middle, in midfield, whether it's in a defensive or an attacking mould, and probably some proper attacking wide players. And there isn't really anyone of the requisite standard who is available in January. I can't think of anyone. In the Bundesliga, certainly.
Oh, dark times ahead then for Man United, as we say, Sunderland in the League Cup. What about Swansea? In the fourth round, they'll be facing Birmingham, Bristol Rovers, or Crawley.
Wow. That's a lot of teams.
That's a lot of teams. No, or is the key word in there.
I was impressed with them yesterday, because they have a lot of players out, and they had some important players out, like Michu, who's not played as well this season and had a lot of injuries, and Nathan Dyer, who got that bad injury at Norwich also. But Boney in the last few games has started to play quite well. He was very good against City, and that goal yesterday, he'd had to generate a lot of power into that header, because there wasn't a lot of pace on the cross. And also, someone who's starting to shine for them is Pozuelo in midfield, who was brilliant yesterday at times. I don't think he's done too much, but he's a really nice little player who can work in between the lines and put players in, and he's good with the ball, good little dribbler. And it's just, again, another example of Swansea getting a player who no one knew about on the cheap from Spain. And you just look at, you know, my own team, West Ham, and the lack of scouting that some of these clubs do, and compared to teams like Swansea, and you know that, who knows, in maybe a year or two, this could be a player that could go for £10 or £15 million, and they got him for about one or two, I think. And again, another great signing.
Well, you mentioned West Ham there, Jacob, and to extent, what happened at Old Trafford took the heat perhaps a little bit off Big Sam.
A little bit.
But only a little bit, because that was catastrophic.
Yeah.
A 5-0 defeat away to Nottingham Forest. And, well, John Salt says, here's hoping Nottingham Forest get a mention in Monday's pod after our demolition of West Ham reserves in the Cup. Was Jamal Abdoun's penalty the first ever Panenka in FA Cup history? What a glorious example of the art form. Well, okay, let's tick that Forest box. Terrific stuff from them. Jamie Patterson?
Yeah, they were very impressive, and West Ham were lucky they only lost 5-0 because they could have lost by a lot more. The Panenka was superb. Rampant Forest is the headline in The Guardian, and they were superb.
They certainly were, weren't
but,
they?
But, I mean, the thing is, it wasn't that much of a shock. The scoreline certainly was, but and the abject nature of West Ham's performance was, but Forest are only 6 places below West Ham. And upwardly mobile, whereas West Ham are very much on a downward slide.
That's a very interesting way of looking at it. Nottingham Forest in the fourth round will be facing either Ipswich or Preston. Big Sam, does this represent a turning point for him, do you think?
No, because I think that he wouldn't have put out that team without telling the owners beforehand what he was going to do.
Right.
Because that is just asking to be sacked to put out a team like that in the FA Cup and then to lose 5-0 to Nottingham Forest.
But that's the sight of that young boy in tears, though. Surely
They put up a thing on the official site yesterday saying, do you know who this boy is? We'll invite him to the director's box for more punishment, to see a game for free.
Right.
So, but I don't know, maybe they could get him a season ticket at Chelsea instead or something. That'll cheer him up,
Jacob.
I think. Yeah. But, it wasn't a huge surprise that West Ham lost that game. And I think he's basically safe until the end of the season, Allardyce. But the thing is, they go into this game against City, and I've never seen less excitement for a Cup semi-final. Both legs are on general sale. Everyone knows they're going to get stuffed on Wednesday, and the big game is against Cardiff on Saturday. The thing is that it's not what happened yesterday. The performance itself wasn't that depressing or surprising, because it was a load of kids, most of whom had never played before. By the end, it was basically an entire team of kids. But it was more the fact that they're in a position where they are throwing the FA Cup more or less on purpose and not trying, and that they've got themselves into this position, which is, I think, what is the annoying thing for supporters.
Right, very interesting point. In some ways, and Alan Pardew mentioned this indeed, the timing of this third round, coming after the festive fixture pile-up, 3 rounds in a week, was, you can understand in some ways why managers would need to rest players. You're coming through the most ludicrously intense period of fixtures, 3 rounds in a week. But to do what Big Sam did, and indeed what some other clubs did as well, to basically lose matches in order to win matches just seems to be entirely against the whole notion of football.
There is this. Well, first thing is, I really enjoyed the Christmas period, but I feel the amount of sort of muscle injuries that were picked up in between over that little short period would suggest that maybe they could take out one of the games, maybe the one straight after Boxing Day. I mean, West Ham, for example, played Arsenal, a really hard game on Thursday afternoon. On Saturday morning at lunchtime, they were playing West Brom. Their centre back goes off with a groin injury after 10 minutes. Maybe that's something that could be taken out and would have a better effect on teams in the Cup a week later. But people say that winning breeds a winning mentality, but you know, they're in the semi-final of the League Cup, and that's not done anything for them.
Well, that's true, isn't it?
Well, I was at the Macclesfield-Sheffield Wednesday game, and Macclesfield had four games over the Christmas period, won all four, and went into the game with no injuries. No suspension, so, you know, it's...
Well, they were fortunate, perhaps.
Maybe they were, I don't know. But, it's a funny one.
Right. But it did seem, though, I mean, the reaction to what happened to West Ham and the kind of humiliation that they went through there, and well done to Forest, but it does seem like it represents a turning point for Big Sam with the West Ham fans, who are ultimately...
I don't think it represents a turning point. No? A lot of them have wanted him out, basically, since... some people have been waiting for him to fail, because they're naturally taken against him anyway. He does kind of clash with what West Ham as a club historically is about, in terms of passing football, and they have a history in the Cups as well, but most anything they've won has been in the Cups. And he's not a manager who really attacks the Cups with much vigour, so you know, it's not a turning point, it's just another nail.
Indeed.
Well, Roy Keane made the point yesterday that, and he was very critical of Allardyce, that if you're a football manager, your job is to win football matches. Mm. So if you're not trying to win football matches, you're not doing your job and therefore shouldn't be in it, really. And I think Allardyce, he's very popular in the game, but he's kind of made a rod for his own back, because whenever West Ham do well, he's first to take the credit. It was all down to him, and, you know, everything, you know, the enormous solo he blew in his own trumpet after their win over Spurs being a case in point. But when things go wrong, he just blames everyone and everything possible except himself.
And nicely put indeed by Simon Barnes in the Times today, where he says that managers who say we're doing this for the best of the club, I'm managing resources for the best of the club, it's not about the club, it's about the fans, and this is not for the best of the fans, especially 3,000 West Ham fans who go up to Nottingham and are now petitioning, I think, to have their expenses repaid by the club. Yeah, so good luck with that one.
Yeah, that's probably not going to happen, but look.
Can you remember a worse time? Sorry, just to ask, can you remember a worse time for West Ham than this, even though they're up in the Premier League?
Yeah. Avram Grant.
Right, okay, fair enough.
Just go back to Forest briefly. Billy Davis, who's sort of got a reputation as a rather spiky manager as well, he, I think, has been making a statement of intent by leaving strikers on the bench and playing Greg Halford up front. But it's backfired on him in that Greg Halford is playing very well up front. So any point he was trying to make about needing money for new players is likely to be ignored, because look what you have at your disposal.
Fair enough.
I think what would worry me as a West Ham fan is the kind of lack of enthusiasm and fire that Big Sam is exuding. He just looks like somebody who's kind of lost a bit of interest in football.
Is there a touch of the Martin Yoles about him, do you think?
Yeah, I think he just kind of looks disheartened and doesn't strike you as somebody who's really going to turn things around. It's just like I don't know.
Well, a couple of weeks ago, I confidently said I don't think he would get relegated to you, and then it increasingly feels like they're not going to get out of it, because they've never won two games in a row under him in the league. In the Premier League, I think, certainly did in the Championship, but they're basically going to have to do that to stay up at some point, because the last few games in their running are horrendous. They play City away on the last day, for example, and you imagine that they'll probably still be going for the title the way the title race is going. He just seems to have lost the... I don't know if he's lost the belief of the players a little bit as well.
Really? You don't see them trying for their manager anymore?
No, because the squad isn't great. A lot of the players don't have great quality, but last season there was just a lot more effort throwing themselves in front of shots. And this season, heads have dropped when they've conceded, and it's not been great.
All right, well, never mind. Those derbies with Leighton Orient will certainly help fill the Olympic Stadium, won't they?
It's not for a few years.
FA Cup winners and losers. How about that Paul Lambert? He said things and then they lost a game.
But he didn't apparently play that week inside.
No, it wasn't especially.
No, they just lost.
But they just were bad anyway. Yeah. Terrific result for Sheffield United.
Very good result for Sheffield United.
Yeah.
And they've not had a lot to shout about in the last few years.
Well, indeed.
Yeah.
Another winner from the FA Cup weekend, Cardiff. Just mentioned that. Rafa, was this you tweeting about how... OGS says yes to Cardiff and he's already signed two players represented by his own agent. Halo well and truly slipped.
It was me, and generally speaking I don't have a huge problem with managers signing players from agents that they're very close with, although it does sometimes pose a conflict of interest, possibly. The bigger issue with him is I think he arrived with this reputation of being sort of the goody two-shoes of European football, a man who will be very careful about the first club he'll choose in the Premier League and look very carefully at the structures and the owners. And, you know, he signed for Cardiff and has already brought in two players of his best friend and his agent. And at Mould, I think he had nine players from the same agent. And there was talk of Mohamed Diouf, a Norwegian, also represented by Jim Solbakken, coming across to Cardiff next. And you just wonder if... Yeah, the halo has slipped a little bit.
Is there a touch of the Venky's paradigm about this whole thing?
I don't know about the Venky's, but it's just, I don't know. I mean, if he was any other manager, I'd say, unfortunately, that's almost to be expected. That's how football works.
Right.
And mostly it's a lack of imagination on managers' behalf that they let agents come and pitch players to them rather than go out and have a proper scouting system. It's just, I think, in his particular case that he... The reality doesn't quite match with the hype of somebody who's, you know, such a principled person with big values.
You feel let down, don't you, Rafa?
No, I don't.
Yeah, I think you do. Barry?
Could it be a case that he just implicitly trusts this friend and agent and thinks he has a good eye for a player. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just, it isn't inconceivable, is it?
No, absolutely. It's not. And like I said, a lot of managers work that way. They have one or two agents and they're very happy to pick from their roster. And Solbakken, being the Jorge Mendes of Norwegian football, has all the best players. The question is, if you're signed by Cardiff, should you necessarily restrict yourself to Norwegians when it comes to strengthening? I think that's the bigger problem. You can trust your agent, but if he only represents Norwegians, that's not a big, very big pool to choose from.
That's very, very true. Well, whatever he's doing, it certainly worked in that first game at St James's Park. What a debut scalp to take, Jacob.
Yeah, probably not many people expected that given the form Newcastle were in, but I think they were 1-0 down and he made a couple of substitutions, Solskjaer, and they paid off.
Oh, it's almost like an eerie parallel with his own career, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think a lot of Newcastle fans were expecting Cardiff to win that game. Their performance was just incredibly insipid, and it was as if Newcastle are just plodding along and they'd be happy to finish 11th. They don't want to qualify for Europe. They don't want to have to buy players to mount a challenge on European places. And Ashley is just happy enough plodding along, right, being mid-table.
You wonder that sometimes teams like that, because they had such a that Europa League had such a bad effect on them last season. They're not in it this year. At this point last year, he was almost on the verge of the sack, and they were in the relegation zone. I think they just lost to Brighton in the cup away, and they had their entire team out more or less. And you sort of wonder sometimes, would teams like Wigan or whoever else are in the Europa League, Swansea, it's had a bad effect on them, win a cup and not go into the Europa League, because it has such...
You can decline, presumably. But it just seems strange you're in a position.
I think if you decline, you get a sanction by UEFA.
Oh, right.
Certainly if you decline to compete in the FA Cup, you'd be banned for it from indefinitely, if not forever.
But what we seem to be seeing is an increasing number of clubs for whom playing football just gets in the way of the business of playing football.
Well, the problem is that the link between success and money has been broken in the Premier League, because it doesn't make any difference whether you're in the Europa League or not financially, but it makes a big difference whether you're in the Premier League or the Championship financially. So just finishing 11th or 12th and keeping the money rolling in is really the main interest of a lot of people concerned. The manager, the owner, the players, everyone just wants to keep making the money.
Right.
And I know of one or two players who've told me that when it comes to the end of the season, and if they're in danger of qualifying for Europe, sometimes intensity can drop off a little bit because nobody wants to be there.
I was at Chelsea training ground on Friday, and Mourinho was kind of asked about what he made of Paul Lambert's comments about the FA Cup. And he said that what he's seen increasingly is that a lot of players, young players, he was saying, not top players, he said top players can't be like this. If you want to win anything, then you can't be like this. But young players, he's seen increasingly, are more interested in making money than winning trophies. And he said in the past, he wouldn't name anybody, but he's turned down players who he didn't think had the right motivation to play for him, who he felt had the wrong people around them, who were sort of, you know, taking their priorities elsewhere, away from actually football. That he knows how to put a squad together that can win trophies, doesn't he? And he knows the right characters to be in his team. And he was just saying that sometimes he's looked at players and gone, no, not for me. You're not the right person for me.
Right. Chelsea got a 2-0 win, just to flag that one and knock another game off. 2-0 way to Derby.
It's a shame, really, because when you're a kid growing up, you dream of scoring the winner in the FA Cup final. Nobody dreams of, you know, finishing ninth in
Perhaps
the table.
Perhaps kids do now, Barry.
Well,
Perhaps
maybe they do. Yeah, they dream of finishing ninth and driving a very nice car.
Yeah. I think we all do, really. anyway, there you go. We talked about that. Ooh, MK Dons, 3-3 with Wigan. Hull beat Borough despite naughty Steve Bruce disrespecting the cup and fielding a whole load of reserves in that one, but he got away with that.
And they've now set up a tie with Southend, who are managed by former Hull boss Phil Brown.
What a great bank story.
So Phil Brown's
he
off
returns.
To...
Is it away or at home?
Are
you thinking Humber Bridge here? You are, aren't you? Yeah.
I think it's at Southend, actually. I think. Yeah, it is at Southend.
Right.
Southend were number 6 in the draw. Hull were number 7. Right. Number 6 came out first.
Right. Oh, Super 7, well done to Phil Brown, who's doing a fantastic job.
Well, they beat Millwall, who were managed, who were being caretaker managed by their Millwall legend, Neil Harris, who is also a former Southend boy. So it's just, you know, one interesting backstory after another.
Crikey, isn't it, though? What about Southampton Burnley? How interesting was that?
You'll have
Four
to ask three. Someone else about that.
4-3 as Burnley went...
2-0 down, Burnley. And yeah. then they came back, and then it went to 2-2 in the second half, 4-2 to Southampton, and then another late goal.
All right, they really went for it.
They did, yeah, but, yeah, which is good, because they could have not gone for it, because
they've got league stuff on, haven't they?
The automatic promotion places, they're second at the moment, Leicester atop of the Championship. But Burnley gave it a really good go against a good team.
All right. Sunderland beat Carlisle, I mentioned that. Liverpool, Oldham. Everton 4-0 against QPR. Palace 2-0 against West Brom, eh? Hey, what about that Blackburn Man City game? This was interesting, wasn't it? I must admit, I hadn't been keeping up with the latest instalments from Ewood Park, so it was good to find out what's happening there. I know plenty of you listeners have. Maybe, I know, Rafa, have you across what's been, you know, the post. The Venkies are still there, but it seems that they're kind of getting back to the
business of... They're not as bonkers as they used to be, which is quite disappointing.
No, it's not, Barry.
That is a bit.
It is a bit, but no, it's not.
Oh, no, it's right. It's great to see.
Great to see them.
The club is being run more professionally, and they were very impressive against Manchester City, right.
Well, they've earned themselves a money-spinning return at the Etihad now, while simultaneously remaining 2 points off the playoff positions, I think, in the Championship. So, and Gary Boyer is there, and he does seem to be a proper manager, as opposed to some crazed loon that's been drafted in on the basis of knowing somebody in India.
No, they played well, Blackburn, in that game. And obviously City were slightly fortunate not to be knocked out, given that it could have gone the same way as Manchester United, given their right back was also sent off with about 10 minutes to go, which was one of the more moronic red cards I've seen, Boyata, because I can't remember who had the... It was DJ Campbell had the ball, and Boyata just out of nowhere, already on a booking, just swiped his legs away for no reason at all. And was sent off, and Blackburn had one chance to win it after that. Probably a game that City could do without as well.
Right. With their thin squad.
Did you see the thing about the substitution for Negredo and Dzeko?
Oh, no, go on.
So Pellegrini already not been great with numbers this season. They took off, the substitute ball came up for Navas to come on with about 15 minutes to go. Off went Negredo, and Dzeko stayed on. And about 5 minutes later, the BT commentator said, apparently they mixed up the numbers, and Dzeko was meant to go off, not Negredo.
Pellegrini.
Could happen.
You'd think they would have, said, actually, no. He's Negredo, the good one's meant to stay on.
Right. What about Pantelimon?
Yeah, he messed up for the goal.
He certainly did.
Yeah. Joe Hart didn't. He was sort of applauding in the saying, trying to G him up.
I'm sure he was, yeah. Right. Okay, anyway, so that one's going to go to a replay and the fourth round draw in the meeting.
Bloody Romanians coming in.
Not much in the way of tasty match-upness in the fourth round draw. You've got Chelsea hosting Stoke, Man City, Blackburn. That replay winner will face a home fixture against Bristol City or Watford. Stevenage knocked out Doncaster, and they get Everton. Coventry travel to Arsenal. That's quite interesting, because producer Ben looked at that and went, didn't Arsenal absolutely hammer Coventry last year in the FA Cup? And the answer was no, they didn't. But in the League Cup, they beat them 6-1 at the Emirates. Of course, the question is, who's going to be scoring the goals for Arsenal this time around when they face Coventry? Because, yikes.
Gnabry. Yeah.
Gnabry.
He'll score the goals.
Yeah, there you go. Well, you're a big Gnabry fan, aren't you, Rafa? And I bet you your estimation of him, your esteem for him, has gone up even more after his performance in the game against Spurs.
He played really well. He played with real confidence and authority. It helped, of course, that Arsenal had a lot of the ball, and his involvement was such that he had a lot of time to do things on the ball and had a bit of space, which helped. And yeah, he played really well. It was probably the best game he's had as a senior player.
You were saying before that you think he might even make the Germany squad for the World Cup.
Yeah, there is talk at the German FA that they might almost have to pick him as a defensive measure, because the Ivorians have come in from his dad is Ivorian.
Defensive in that sense.
Yeah. But we'll have to see. I mean, it's going to be tough getting into that Germany squad, especially in attacking midfield positions where they just have so many players available.
And if they pick him for a game in between now, then it doesn't count, does it?
No.
Crikey.
I think the Coventry draw is actually fairly relevant, because it's the game before Bayern Munich come to town. And you could just imagine the difference if it had been, let's say, Chelsea or Man United or something like that on a Saturday. So I think Arsenal would be able to, again, make a few changes and perhaps manage the squad.
Well, we should talk a little bit about Arsenal, Spurs. I don't know if, listener, you feel we've been banging on about the cup a bit, but this is probably the standout tie of the round, and it was an emphatic win for Arsenal. Many things to talk about. Was Tim Sherwood a bit naive, the way he approached this game? And what about naughty Theo Walcott, bad boy of the Gunners' locker room, and his incendiary gestures?
Yeah. Incitement to the crowd.
Horrible.
Yeah, some Spurs fans getting very, very, very angry. Their faces contorted with rage.
Yes.
Hurling missiles at someone for telling them the score of the game they were at.
I have to say, from the stretcher bearer's point of view, you might want to say, Theo, leave it out, chum.
Yeah, but I don't think there's any way blame can be apportioned to him.
He wasn't the one throwing the coins at them.
No.
That's fair. But he does look like he's going to be out for a sustained period. 4 weeks, is it? Bentner out and...
Giroud is back.
Giroud,
only Wenger said that Giroud didn't play because he was sick. He would have been available otherwise. So he is physically available again.
Right.
What about Mandzukic?
Yeah, what about Mandzukic?
What about
Berbatov? Has anything happened about that?
No. Wenger said he's not interested. Mandzukic...
What?
Yeah, he did. Mandzukic might be available in the summer, but that's still a very big if, because Bayern will only have two centre-forwards on their books at that time, and there's just no guarantee that they will say, you know what, we don't need two centre-forwards. It'll all come down to his own way of dealing with the situation that Lewandowski will come in as the new number nine, which I'm sure we'll talk about a little bit later.
Let's talk about that a little bit later. Before that, we've got to do three things. One, play a bit of music. Two, talk about Spurs and Arsenal in that game. And three, hear a little bit about the real magic of the cup from Barry, who went to Macclesfield, where it was all kind of magical, was it?
Yes.
All right. But anyway, so Arsenal-Spurs. Hey, anything else we want to throw at this?
Yeah, I think you have to say that Spurs didn't turn up. And I think they were dealt a losing hand in many ways by the manager, who picked a side that really weren't able to withstand the particular game that Arsenal are very good at. And secondly, of course, they had a lot of injuries, which you have to admit.
But when you say they didn't turn up, do you mean mentally they weren't there?
No, they were there. They were trying. I think there were one or two performances, and I think that they were actually good. And the Spurs players themselves tried to make the most of it. But as I said, I think they were set up to lose almost. And we talked about the 4-4-2 when they played at United, where they showed it can work, but it worked because you had Soldado and Adebayor work incredibly hard to drop back into midfield. The problem is Arsenal keep the ball a lot better than Man United and make you work even harder. And it's usually what happens after 60, 70 minutes. Somebody loses their head, gets sent off, or people tired. They can't drop into midfield anymore. And that's what happened a little bit earlier, because they could spend so much time running after the ball that when the few occasions that they had it, they didn't really know what to do with it, or they were too knackered to do anything constructive with it. So there was no cutting edge. And a very decent Spurs side in terms of the attitude, I felt, and individual performances collectively weren't at the races.
All right then. Hey, Barry, what about Macclesfield, eh? Give us some heartwarming... Yeah, we've talked a lot about the cynical side of football. Give us some heartwarming tales of
Well, there was a little bit of cynicism at this game as well. Oh. Macclesfield were entertaining Sheffield Wednesday at Moss Rose. They went goal behind and then equalised. Splendid equaliser from a lovely volley from Steve Williams, who's a centre half and showed remarkable poise.
And Macclesfield, the lowest team still in the competition.
Yeah, they're a mid-table in the conference. In terms of budget, their manager, John Askew, reckons they're bottom of the conference. They're skint, desperately need 150,000 quid to remain a going concern, which is sort of where his what you might call cynicism came in, because with the team's level and Macclesfield all over Wednesday, who were dreadful in the second half, particularly an awful team, he withdrew his two strikers, bolstered the defence, and settled for the draw because he wanted the money from the replay.
The replay with Wednesday?
Yeah.
Is that a particularly lucrative replay?
Well, they'll get some money for it. They'll get a share of the gate, and every little helps them. But now, it could have backfired in so far as you know, first of all, there's no guarantee they would have scored, but it looked like it. They were dominating, they were on top, the crowd were baying for blood, and I think they might well have won if he'd left his strikers on. But say in the draw yesterday, they got an away match to Manchester United or Manchester City or somebody, then he'd have been kicking himself because, you know, they for not sort of ramming home right. their advantage when it mattered. But as it happened, the draw could not have been more unkind to them, and they got Rochdale away.
Right.
Rochdale had a great win over Leeds, and they're probably not going to be too thrilled with drawn Macclesfield either. So, but the yeah, I really right enjoyed there. My experience at Moss Rose. Although I did pick up a back injury there because the press facilities are rather spartan. Ooh. So I was sitting on a seat and had to sort of lean to my right or to my left to type. And from doing this for about an hour and 20 minutes, I've now got a terrible pain in my back.
Well, you might want to look into, you know, to legal action on that.
I don't think Macclesfield could afford legal action.
You know, okay, and food-wise, what did they offer?
Nothing.
Nothing?
No, they are skint, like so...
Not even soup?
Not even soup. I'm not complaining, I hasten to add.
No, I'm the one asking the question.
I would have been happy to pay for a pie. Didn't even had to pay for a match programme, so...
Right.
Yeah, that's how broke there.
Wow, okay, well, good luck to them. And let's hope lots of paying customers turn up to the rematch with Wednesday.
But that was the 21st match out of 25 Wednesday have failed to win this season, and it's actually astonishing that they're not in the Championship relegation zone because they are truly terrible.
They've just been drawing and drawing and drawing.
Yeah, they've about 10 or 12 draws. I don't have a league table in front of me, I do. But yeah, a lot of draws under Dave Jones. Stuart Gray is their caretaker manager. He'll find out on Tuesday, I think, whether he's getting the job full time. I suspect he may not.
Wow. Okay. Time for that music, I promised you. And then transfers. Right then, listeners, transfers. It's January 6th. We've had almost a week of this transfer window. What have we got to show for it, Jacob? Nothing.
No.
Nothing on Berbatov yet. No. Rooney stalling on a new contract again. Chelsea, could they revive their interest?
I think so. Suggestions.
But Man United couldn't let him go.
Chelsea might just come back in. Well, I think that. It's hard to think of Mourinho making any cynical moves and the transfer market just to upset another big team. But there. I think there was a suggestion that it might just try again to see what the answer would be. With Rooney still, as you said, not committing himself. It's just one more problem that they'll need, United. And I think it's, in hindsight, you could say maybe that was one of the reasons why they got their own transfer window so badly wrong, because they had to spend a lot of time making sure that Rooney doesn't leave. And they put out this big statement after transfer window saying that one of our main objectives has been achieved. We managed to keep Wayne Rooney. And you know that if that's one of your main objectives, that you're not really doing well as a club. So maybe Mourinho will think it worked a treat. Let's just repeat that trick.
Right. Well, let's just whiz through one or two of the other transfer rumours. Wilfried Zaha to Cardiff. You see that happening?
On loan, maybe.
Yeah. Okay. Ricky Lambert apparently wants to go to West Ham to resolve, Jacob, your striker crisis there.
I don't know if he wants to go or whether West Ham want him.
Saints want 8 million.
Yeah, West Ham another 30-year-old, however old he is.
But he scores, doesn't he?
Not so many this season.
Mm-hmm. He can score goals in the Championship, which could prove crucial.
He did score a lot of goals in the Championship. Yep. No, the other one they're linked with is Lassina Traore on loan, who's just joined Monaco from Angie.
Right.
And now they're going to let him go on loan, apparently. He's he's 6'8".
Monaco apparently want Thomas Ince.
Yeah.
Out of Blackpool. Interesting.
Yeah.
Monaco might be losing Falcao themselves because that situation doesn't seem entirely resolved. And Villa want Wes Hoolahan from Norwich. It's all want, isn't it, really?
Celtic want Stephen Fletcher from Sunderland.
Do they?
And so do Spurs, apparently. And I think if he goes, there seems to be a fair chance he will go to Celtic for £3 million.
Boom.
Sunderland might as well just drape a banner across the front of the stadium light with "We Give Up" written on it.
Okay. Arsenal apparently are interested in Porto's Jackson Martinez.
A lot of clubs are interested in Martinez. The problem is that Porto have been quoting prohibitive prices for him in the summer. I think they wanted €40 million or something around that. And I can't see the price having gone down much, and you wonder if it really is worth that. I'm not quite sure. He's good, but...
Not 40 million good. No. Spurs and Liverpool both want Solomon Kalou, who's doing great with Lille. Okay, you're excited by that. Germany, Rafa.
Why? What's the point in discussing...
Because it's exciting.
Transfers.
It is exciting.
People want.
I like exciting transfer rumours. You mentioned Lewandowski before, and all sorts of clubs have been looking wistfully in his direction, but he's gone, isn't he?
Yeah, in non-news, he has now signed for Bayern.
Right.
It's been a long term coming. Wenger was asked about this on Saturday. He said, yeah, we looked into him, but we realised he'd made up his mind 1.5 years ago. That's probably not quite the right time frame, but since February, there's been an agreement between him and Bayern that he was going to move. The question was, would he go in the summer? Bayern came close to signing him. They made an effort. Dortmund said no. And now he's coming in as one of the most expensive Bosmans ever, because once you factor in all the sign-on fees, the agent's fees, plus a very nice salary for 5 years, he's got a five-year deal, you're probably looking about 70, 80 million euros. Certainly Real Madrid tried to hijack the move. Lewandowski's people have admitted this, with an offer that came down to 81 million euros, everything combined. And they did listen to them, because they said, out of respect to such a big club, we have to listen to them, but turned them down.
Wow.
And Bayern apparently were very, very unhappy that Real Madrid came in at a very late stage in December to get him.
Bundesliga is looking very uncompetitive. What's the feeling?
It's a bit like Serie A, but...
it's not as bad as Serie A. We'll come into that in a second. Yeah,
no, it's just, you know, there's so much talk about it last year, about what a great league it is, and now...
Yeah, I mean, some of the talk of last year was misguided in the sense that two very good teams have emerged, and then everybody was saying, wow, this is now a great league. And the Champions League isn't really a reflection of leagues as such. It reflects where the good teams play, and they might be playing in any league. It's no coincidence that you have good teams in every league. Not necessarily one league being consistently good at this level. I mean, Bayern in a double bind, of course they need the whole league to be healthy, because otherwise they can't keep growing, and nobody wants to pay for them winning every 34 games every season. At the same time, they've got a chance to sign one of the best strikers in Europe on the free transfer. And they're thinking, we're not competing with Dortmund, we're competing with Real Madrid, Barcelona,
right,
with Chelsea. We have to do this. So
the only good news is that the money's going back into the Bundesliga.
It's staying in the league. Yeah. It's staying in the league. Although, of course, you know, if there'd been a transfer fee, there would have more money would have been available to Dortmund. Now the money stays mostly with Lewandowski and his agents.
Right.
But he stays in the Bundesliga, which is good. Although, Süddeutsche Zeitung very wittingly in an article said Bayern are so far ahead. Lewandowski has said he will leave the Bundesliga because he's going to Bayern.
Tell you what, while we're on a continental tip, should we dial up Sid Lowe of Spanish football coverage fame to hear what on earth's going down in Genero over there in the Liga? Sid Lowe! Happy New Year, Feliz Año. No, it's not Año, is it? It's Anno. No, that's right. One day,
Anis. No, it's definitely Anio, not Feliz Anno. I mean, I suppose you could want
you
me to.
You could
have
want a happy
Anis.
Bum. Yeah. Right. Yeah. All right, then, listeners.
It's a very important little squiggle that above the end.
Certainly.
You don't want people going around wishing you a Feliz Anno. And the most important one is, and I was so tempted to get a marker pen and do this. Cono in Spanish is a cone, and a coño with a squiggle over the end is a very different thing indeed. And I wanted to go around all the McDonald's that used to say cono 50 cents and do little squiggles so that all over the country McDonald's were saying 50 cents.
Jesus Christ, Sid! Yeah, after all that naughtiness, and don't deface things with marker
naughty,
pens.
Jimbo. Can I do another one?
Go on then.
And it is topical, I promise you.
Yeah.
That's almost as naughty as Javier Aguirre, who last night was sent off in his game, Espanyol manager, of course,
right,
those who don't know, the Mexican Javier Aguirre.
Yeah.
The man who set up that great Negrete goal in the 86 World Cup, he was sent off for calling the referee an hijo de puta, which is an SOB in Spanish.
Yeah.
And it was in the official report and everything, you know, the visiting manager was sent off in the 56th minute or whatever it was for calling me this word. And Aguirre afterwards in the press conference just went, it was hilarious. He just started going, well, I did say that. I absolutely said that. And I said this and this and this as well. And just reeled off this load of swearing. He said, look, I'm Mexican. That's the way I talk.
Right.
I talk all the time. And you get some managers who are laughing about things and some others who are a bit uptight and they get upset. But if every manager sent me off for saying things like that, I'd have 152 red cards in my career.
Every referee sent him off.
Yeah, he would have every referee send him off. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
It's just the way he talks, Jimbo.
He's Mexican.
He's Mexican. Do you know what he's got beneath his carpets?
Floorboards? What do you got?
No, he's got underlay.
Hey.
Sid. Sid, do you want to just do some transfer window before we put the phone down? Fabio Coentrão, story to Man United, Sid.
Well, it was on the verge of happening already in the summer, remember?
Is it going to happen this time?
To the extent that Coentrão thought he was going. But more importantly, a guy called Cicada, who's at Granada, thought he was going to Real Madrid.
Mm.
He was in the airport VIP lounge, cracking open a bottle of champagne with about an hour and a half to go till the end of the transfer window, saying he was going to Madrid. Then he gets a call telling him he's not. Coentrão stays at Madrid. I don't think this will happen unless, of course, Real Madrid get another left-back in the meantime. Now, obviously, football managers are prone to telling porcupines, but Ancelotti did say the other day that, as far as he's concerned, the window doesn't exist. No one will be going, and no one will be coming.
All right, well, what about Juan Mata? Could a Spanish side mount a rescue mission for poor Juan?
Yeah, of course they could.
Will they, Sid? Any signs of it?
Well, I mean, Atletico Madrid were showing some interest in him in the summer when there was already a suspicion that Mourinho might not be that keen. But they've just signed El Príncipe, one of Diego Simeone's favourite players from Argentina. So I don't think that's going to happen now. I suspect that with Mata, we might see some clubs like Atletico Madrid offering a loan deal. But then the ball is entirely in Chelsea's court with Mata, because I just don't think there's going to be a fight. So unless Chelsea let it happen, I suspect he's not going to. But of course, for Mata, this is a big year, because he's got the World Cup at the end of it, and I think he knows it. If he doesn't play, then his chance of going to the World Cup will be very, very limited indeed.
Sid, that's fantastic stuff. Listen, my parking's about to run out, so can we do the rest of this on Thursday?
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah,
are you around on Thursday?
As far as I know, yeah.
Can I just ask about Diego Costa, because he is very heavily linked everywhere.
He's not. He. I mean, it would. The way that Diego Costa has spoken to Atletico Madrid, what he said to them over the last couple of months. There's absolutely no way he goes in the winter transfer window. Not least because, I mean, if you look at it logically, purely from our own point of view, look at logically, why would you go now? Atletico Madrid are on the verge of a proper title challenge in Spain. I think they could do genuinely well in the Champions League. He's playing brilliantly when he's 5 months away from a World Cup, which he'll almost certainly play with Spain in Brazil. There's absolutely no logical reason for him to try and damage that in any way, or to run the risk of damaging that in any way. So I just don't see him going now.
Fine, thanks, Sid. All right, and, super. Yeah.
And Jimbo.
Yeah.
I can see a guy with a clipboard. He's walking up to a...
Yeah, he is. He is. Okay.
And also, Diego Costa has told Atletico Madrid that he's got no intention of going.
All right, super stuff. Sid, super.
Same goes for Koke, by the way.
Sorry to disrespect you, and we'll be back for you on Thursday.
Bye-bye.
Can't go without quickly talking about what happened in Italy yesterday and what's happening today. Serie A returning. Today, some absolutely huge games. You've got Napoli up against Sampdoria. Napoli are now level in the third Champions League spot with Fiorentina. Anyway, so they're having loads of games today and some big ones. Napoli-Sampdoria. Sampdoria unbeaten in five. And Sinisa Mihalovic is their manager now, and he's doing great. Then you've got Milan up against Atalanta in a game that their own manager, Allegri, describes as a relegation battle. And given that Allegri has now announced that he's leaving in the summer, he can pretty much say what he wants, so it could be an interesting time for Milan. Their new signing, Keske Honda, won't be featuring that, but he probably will be the following weekend, they think. And later on today, it's Lazio against Inter. Disappointingly, we're not going to get that scene where the two Lazio managers have a have a wrestling match to see gets to sit on the bench. Because it seems they have now finally resolved it. I think this one's still going to go to court. Petkovic is going to sue them for wrongful dismissal. But for now, it's Eddie Rejo who's come back to the club, and he'll be sitting there. Inter now are, let me get this straight, 5 points off the top three. So if they win that, they'll be back in the mix for the Champions League positions. But the two big stories from yesterday's games, Sunday's games in Serie A, one was Fiorentina got a 1-0 win against Livorno to move level with Napoli in third place. But what they lost out on was Giuseppe Rossi. And this is really bad news. I know Sid will be distraught about this because Rossi's a friend of his. And I think a friend of pretty much anyone who's met him is super bloat and a great player. He's had, 18 months out? 3 operations? He's done his cruciate ligaments in his right knee twice. He's come back, unbelievably, gone straight in as top scorer at Fiorentina, where he's been carrying the team to a large extent because Gomez has been out injured. But yesterday in the game against Livorno, not a desperately bad-looking tackle, but his head goes back, a yelp of pain, the way he falls, the knee gets a bit twisted, he's helped off the pitch, and they're doing the test today, but it looks as though Rossi may have done that same knee, the cruciate ligaments, again, which really raises all sorts of questions about his future, naturally about what's going to happen. I mean, if that's the case, it'll be the season over for him. World Cup gone, again, him missing out on a major international tournament. But we really hope that it turns out to be just a very nasty sprain or something, but we'll get more. You'll probably know more about that by the time we come back on Thursday. Anyway, Sunday night, there was the big match between the top two in Italy, Juventus taking on Roma. Roma had been spanked on their last two visits to the Juventus Arena, but they came in to this one still unbeaten, and of course with some key players back. Gervinho was back, Totti was back, and they were 5 points behind Juve at the top of the table. But Juve just blew them away. Sat back deep in the first half and did a pretty Italian job on Roma. Roma looked great, played enough football for both sides in the first 45 minutes, but it was Juve who grabbed the goal on a little bit of defensive inattention from De Rossi, which allowed Tevez, who worked hard to set up Vidal. Vidal got the opener, and then start of the second half, there was a free kick, and Pirlo put a ball in, and who was it? It was Bonucci, completely lost his marker. One of the Roma centre-backs, Castan, forgot there was someone behind him, and Bonucci slid in, and there it was 2-0, and that was just game over. Then Roma picked up 2 red cards in the space of 86 seconds when De Rossi did a flying sliding tackle on, can you do a flying sliding? No, you can't really. He kind of flew in both footed on Chiellini, who had a terrific game. He went, and then a little bit after that, it was Castan himself who got the red card for doing a bit of a Suarez, a goal line clearance with a fist. Anyway, so that was a huge win for Juventus. 3-0 was the final score. That's their 10th straight victory. And it means that there's now 8 points between first and second in Serie A, which is even more than there is in the Bundesliga. So that's another way that Serie A trumps the German top division. And tell you one thing that struck me today when I was reading the match report was it turns out Luciano Moggi, remember that name?
Mm-hmm.
He was at the game. He was sitting in Andrea Agnelli, the top person at Juve's, in his box. My word. So the man who's basically machinations and dirty dealings dragged the club into the worst crisis of their history and besmirched Italian football again was sitting next to the Juve president at their biggest game of the season so far. Well, a lot of Juve fans feel they owe Moggi a lot.
It worked, though, with the 2 red cards.
Yeah. I have to say, one nice thing about this game from a Roman point of view is at least there was no complaining about the refs this, winds of the north, etc., etc. I mean, Juve just looked head and shoulders the better side. Anyway, that very much is it. Wish we had time to talk about more things, but it'll have to wait until Thursday's Football Weekly Extra. Meantime, many thanks, Jacob Steinberg, producer Ben. Thank you, Raphael Honigstein. And thank you, Barry Glendinning.
You're welcome.
Cheers, listeners. We're back on Thursday. See you then.